Iraq until she comes.
Sure. Okay, good morning. This is April 21st and Northeast Street Bible Study 2012. And we're going to be looking at part of the parasha, specifically on dealing with leprosy. So if you want to go there, we'll start in Leviticus 13. And I'm just going to not read the whole thing, I'm just going to read some of the highlights. The Lord, this is verse 1, Leviticus 13, verse 1. The Lord said to Moses and Aaron, when anyone has a swelling or a rash or a bright spot on his skin, that he may become an infectious skin disease, he must be brought to Aaron the priest or to one of his sons, who is a priest. The priest is to examine the sore on his skin, and if the hair in the sore has turned white, and the sore appears to be more than skin deep, it is an infectious skin disease. When the priest examines him, he shall pronounce him ceremonially unclean. And let's see here. Timeoto. You know the word for unclean is tame. So, okay. Now let's go to the next verse. If the spot on his skin is white, but does not appear to be more than skin deep, and the hair in it has not turned white, the priest is to put the infected person in isolation for 7 days. On the seventh day, the priest is to examine him, and if he sees that the sore is unchanged and is not spread in the skin, he is to keep him in isolation another 7 days. On the seventh day, the priest is to examine him again, and if the sore is faded and is not spread in the skin, the priest shall pronounce him clean. It is only a rash. The man must wash his clothes, and he will be clean. And let's, if you go down to verse 11, if this rash, this thing hasn't gone away, verse 11, if the hair is white and if the flesh is raw and the swelling, then it is a chronic skin disease, and the priest shall pronounce him unclean, and he's not to put him in isolation because he's already unclean. If the disease breaks out all over his skin, and so far as the priest can see, it covers all the skin, it's covered his whole body, verse 13. And if the disease has, he shall pronounce that person clean. Wait, that doesn't make sense. Verse 12. If the disease breaks out all over his skin, and so far as the priest can see, it covers all the skin of the infected person from head to foot, the priest is to examine him. And if the disease has covered his whole body, he shall pronounce that person clean. Since it has all turned white, he is clean. Okay, so that's kind of a weird understanding. But whenever, verse 14, but whenever raw flesh appears on him, he will be unclean. Okay, so, now, chapter 13 goes through different examples of what we call leprosy in our traditional sense. And this leprosy, we usually think of leprosy as like a guy's nose falling off or their hand rotting off or kind of this gangrene like sickness that eats away the person. But if you notice, if you read all the examples in chapter 13, none of that is
symptom.
None of that's a symptom. That's known as a, and I'm not an expert in leprosy or skin diseases, and so anyone who is, you can always correct me if I'm off a little bit, but that's called Hansen's disease, the thing that rots and eats at your skin, and it was popular in Europe that of what is called leprosy. But biblical leprosy does not seem to be that. And in a second, we'll go back over, well, actually, we can do it now. What are some of the symptoms of the biblical leprosy? What we just read. What?
It's like that type of leprosy.
Which type? Hansen's?
No.
The biblical.
Oh, no, yeah, Hansen's with the
flies. Hansen's, the
That's
rotting.
That's like what you think of, like, medieval Europe.
Right. You think of Life of Brian.
Right.
Monty Python. But I remember there's parts where they're, like, I think they're rotting and their body parts are flying off and they're laughing about it or something. I don't know.
Hansen's disease affects the nerves, and it's because they're dead, that's what causes the disfiguration.
Right.
Whereas this in here, it doesn't seem to be a thing that affects
it's
the
skin
nerves.
Other
it is a, you know, a...
External.
External thing.
Right. So what are some of the symptoms of this?
The skin turning white to the depth, the full depth of the skin.
Right. So there's something about whiteness, a hair being white, the skin mm-hmm. being white. Mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of different examples given of different types of what this is.
Extreme eczema.
Right, exactly. You could, in one example, you could say it's just like, you know, pimples or acne, depending on what a person got. Or you've seen people, they lupo, I forget what the, where your skin, you get these white blotches, they look like almost freckles. And then like a pigment problem. So
isn't it contagious though? In
Hansen's disease or this?
Both.
Well, Hansen's disease isn't contagious unless
it's
not.
No, it's not.
Unless you were to like liquids from the mouth or the nose.
Right, okay.
But not by touch or
if you just touch the skin it wouldn't
no.
be anything.
No.
Just a breakthrough. It has to be an injury.
Yeah. Exactly, and that's what we're going to get to.
What does that mean?
Well,
skin disease.
Right. It's what we call leprosy, but it's not leprosy, or it's not Hansen's disease.
Well, we've translated leprosy, right?
Right.
So.
What happened is tzara'at in the Hebrew became lepra from the Greek. And leprosy, and lepra is a Latin loan word into Greek, which we have in the Septuagint, and today we have leprosy from the Greek / Latin.
Other way, right? A Greek loan
Greek
word
took,
Latin.
Greek took it from Latin.
Oh.
Yeah.
That way.
Yeah.
Okay.
And again, I don't know the whole etymology of how the Greek
and
got
it
from Latin.
Like,
no. Oh. I don't know. I didn't. Go into all that.
Does it mean anything?
Again, I don't know. I just know in the Septuagint, it's called lepra. So.
I wonder what it is.
Okay, so what we read here in Leviticus 13 is something with the skin, something that's white. You don't see someone rotting. You don't see someone dying from it even. You see people having this thing on their skin.
And open sores as well.
Right? Sores, right. Sores and whiteness associated with it.
But the white type of skin condition is not common today.
You mean where your skin turns white?
Yeah.
Well, it is. I've seen people with it a lot often. Especially, I remember in New York City there was a few. Like albinos or, I mean, even...
That's different.
Like
that's a genetic thing.
No, I know, but
that's something that you contract.
And goes
no.
away.
Right. It doesn't go away. No, that one doesn't go. It's a mutation of the
right. Right.
Right, but I'm not even sure if you could contract this, if you know what I'm saying.
Uh-huh.
Based on.
Or when the body has a burn on the skin and the raw flesh of the burn becomes a spot, reddish, white, or white.
Right.
Which is from burn.
Right, right. And then, right. Yeah, Leviticus has a lot of problems with fluids coming out of your body, you know, whenever it happens to you. So, like,
he talked about that, like, you know, the rust in your
right.
hand or spot, I mean, it sounds like a boil or.
Right, like boils. Yeah, it's.
And one that we just read about, tzara'at, does it. It can heal, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Hansen's
does not heal. I mean,
right.
Yeah, it's a death sentence.
Yeah.
It can now? Oh, okay.
Yes,
okay, okay, sir.
They identified the virus and so they can treat it.
Oh, great.
They get it quicker now.
All right.
But at the time, it was, if you had it, it was kind of delayed.
It was, yes. It's only a fairly recent discovery, but it was named after Hansen who discovered it. But I don't know the
right
time.
Yeah.
So, okay, so go to verse 45, 13:45. This is the person who's pronounced unclean must do this. They must wear torn clothes. They must let their hair be unkempt or uncover their head. And in the Hebrew there, it is the same. Yeah, it's the same word. Let me just, Pahua, connected to Numbers 5, right? The woman who's suspected of adultery, the priest is supposed, he's supposed to let her hair down, and it's that same word there. Or, let me just check, so I'm not like lying on.
Pahua or Pera?
Yeah.
Oh, what it says in the background there, if you
don't know. Yeah, it's related.
It's also in, what is it, Leviticus 10, when Aaron's oldest two sons are toasted.
Yeah.
That God, or Moses says, don't eat the
Don't let your hair go crazy.
Yeah.
So, this should give us...
Samson also has that word, right?
Who?
Samson. His hair is Pera, I think.
I don't...
Wild and crazy.
Okay, so this word, that word, Para or Pahua... does not have good associations, so we'll come to that. So they let their hair down, or it's unkept, or it's uncovered. Cover the lower part of his face, and it's a svatayim here, al safam.
And it says here the lip shall cover his own.
Right, safa svatayim. So. It's literally the lip
or
mustache, but it's here in the NIV they say cover the lower part of the face and cry out unclean, unclean. As long as he has the infection, he remains unclean. He must live alone. He must live outside the camp. Now, chapter 14. If the skin disease, called leprosy, is cleansed, this is what you're supposed to do. Verse 2. Leviticus 14, verse 2. These are the regulations for the diseased person at the time of his ceremonial cleaning. Hamtzoha. And verse 3. The priest is to go outside the camp, examine him. If the person has been healed of his infectious disease, the priest shall order that two live clean birds and some cedar wood, scarlet yarn, and hyssop be brought for the person to be cleansed. Then the priest shall order that one of the birds be killed over the fresh water in a clay pot. He is then to take the live bird and dip it together with the cedar wood and the scarlet yarn and the hyssop into the blood of the bird that was killed over the fresh water. Seven times he shall sprinkle the one to be cleansed of the infectious disease and pronounce him clean. Then he is to release the live bird in the open fields. Kind of weird. What's that remind us of? The two birds.
The magical.
Adultery.
The woman suspects of adultery. Doesn't
she just drinks the potion.
She just drinks,
but you're saying once she's proven that she's not bad. Okay, Frank.
It's like Yom Kippurim. You've got one.
Exactly.
Once that's, you kill, one that goes away.
Right. And Yom Kippurim, you got two goats.
Right.
Yeah. And you kill the one goat, and then you put that blood on the living, like the hands or something, have blood on it, and they put it on the, that's in Leviticus 16. You put the blood on that other goat, and then you send him, the Azazel, you send him off into the wilderness.
There's no blood on that goat. You just put
okay.
it on it and send it away.
All right, send that goat away without
you
blood.
You transmit your sins, basically, your iniquities.
Right. But you do put the hands on it, right?
Yeah, you put your hands on it.
Leviticus 16. Let's get it all straight here. Verse 20. Leviticus 16:20. Bring forward the live goat. 21. He is to lay both hands on the head of the live goat confess over it all the wickedness and rebellion of the Israelites, all their sins, put them on the goat's head, and send the goat away into the desert, Midbar, I think it is, in the care of a man appointed for the task. The goat will carry on itself all their sins to a solitary place, and the man shall release it in the desert. Okay, so sorry, I'm looking back at Numbers 5. Sharon brought up about the woman who's tested for being unfaithful to her husband. Just making sure. Numbers.
What it reminds me of is just kind of like a weird ceremony.
Right.
But the components are maybe different.
Right. Like yeah, so it's different, yeah. So I don't see... So I do see the connection with, you got the two birds here, one lives, one sacrificed or whatever, and one goes off. So it's similar to Yom Kippurim. I don't know if there's another sacrifice or ceremony like that where you have one living animal and one dead animal. If you can think of one, let us know. So back to Leviticus 14. So you do this this type of ceremony. And verse
9. 39 or 49?
Leviticus 14:8. The person to be cleansed must wash his clothes, shave off all his hair, bathe with water. Then he will be ceremonially clean. After this, he may come into the camp, but he may stay outside his tent for 7 days. On the seventh day, he must shave off all his hair. He must shave his head, his beard, his eyebrows, and the rest of his hair. He must wash his clothes and bathe himself with water, and he will be clean. All right. Shaving head, shaving hair. What's that remind us of? The Nazir? Okay, the Nazirite. And why does the Nazirite shave their head? That's Numbers chapter 6.
It's at the end of his belt.
Go to Numbers chapter 6, verse 9. Well, one of the reasons why they shave their head is if someone dies right in front of them. What's the problem with that?
Unclean.
Right? Death is unclean. Okay. Washing your clothes. What's that remind us of?
Everything.
Okay, but what's the big example? When are we commanded, not we, but when are the Israelites commanded to wash their clothes? The whole nation.
I just have a very short thing.
Sure.
We all know Michael Cohen died and was buried during calling the National Center. And the one who was officiating had his tallit spread over his coffin, and he said, I'm going to break with the Jewish tradition. He said that would usually render my tallit unclean because it's been in contact with the dead. But he said, I consider this to be consecrated, and especially so then he put it on himself and proceeded to continue with the ceremony. I just thought it was
interesting.
He recognized the Jewish prohibition of anything coming in contact with the dead, but he said he felt it was blessed.
Right.
Because Michael Cohen was a
blessed man.
A blessed man.
Right.
That just happened last week.
This is a Messianic Jew or an Orthodox or?
Michael Cohen was a.
No, I know he was Messianic, but.
He was a former rector at Christ Church. And Marshall?
Dave Marshall?
No.
Chaim Barshofsky?
Chaim Barshofsky. He was leading in. And he just made a little twist on the,
right.
the thing, and then he donned the tallit and proceeded to say the Jewish blessings.
Right.
And Chaim Barshofsky is a believer, or he's a.
Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, it's a modern day example of uncleanness, or how it's turned. Okay, so Exodus 19, when the whole nation is commanded, Mount Sinai, right?
Right.
Verse 10. The Lord said to Moses, go to the people, consecrate them today and tomorrow, and have them wash their clothes and be ready by the third day. So, I guess, okay, so keep this in mind, this kind of idea of the holiness, of washing the clothes, shaving the body when it's connected to something dead, and the next point, back to Leviticus 14, verse 9, sorry, verse 10. On the eighth day, he must bring two male lambs and one ewe lamb, a year old. And each without defect, along with the flour, the oil. And verse 12, take one of the male lambs, offered as a guilt offering, along with the oil, wave offering. Verse 13, slaughter the lamb in the holy place, where the sin offering and the burnt offering are slaughtered. Like the sin offering, the guilt offering belongs to the priest. Verse 19, then the priest is to sacrifice the sin offering and make atonement for the one to be cleansed from his uncleanness. After that, the priest shall slaughter the burnt offering and offer it on the altar. However, if he is poor, verse 21, he cannot afford these, the lambs. What does he offer instead?
Two pigeons, two doves.
And what's that remind us of?
Mary,
right?
The woman after childbirth.
The woman after childbirth. She has to do the same offering.
Can't anybody who wants to offer a sin offering and doesn't have enough cash can do the first two?
I mean, that's what it says here.
I mean, like, not just for the mitzvah, but just...
Right, right.
Really, well, anybody.
Well, Mary did it too. Yeah, it's written another part of Leviticus about... So if you're poor, you can't afford it. You can do the pigeons, but so what?
That's crazy expensive.
The lambs.
Yeah.
Especially right. Jesus' day.
Lambs are expensive today.
Any day.
Today, they're it would cost you around how much did he say to get the guy to come do the lamb at our place?
Oh, that was just to slaughter it. Right? Was
I know, but to buy it, yeah. What was it? Is it 1,000? 1,500 shekels?
Oh, yeah, it's at least 1,500 shekels for a lamb.
Right.
I don't know if a lamb, that would be a sheep.
It would be a sheep, right.
Older, but yeah, I'm sure a lamb would be similar.
So something like $500.
Wow.
Right. So, here's a couple things. On the eighth day, what happens on the eighth day? Circumcision. And I just find this kind of interesting that circumcision, this, you know, the whole idea of what does the foreskin represent? Again, there's something that's not connected to God. And when you're following this whole, the logic behind cleanliness and or being unclean, tameh and tahor. Being unclean, does that make you a sinner?
No.
According to Leviticus, or...
No, there's nothing to do with sin.
No. Well,
but, verse... Sorry?
If you don't do the right process, then sin.
Okay.
But leprosy is thought to be associated with sin.
Right. Verse 19, it says the priest is to sacrifice the sin offering and make atonement for the one to be cleansed from his uncleanness. But, of course, it doesn't actually say... Go ahead, Sharon.
Could you also say that sin offering, we call it a sin offering, but it's a chatat, right?
Yeah, it's a chatat.
So couldn't it be from levate, to purify, to, like, we use it today to disinfect?
Yeah, that's true. That's how it's connected. And in more modern translations, it's translated as purification offering, not a sin offering.
Yeah,
right. Sin offering is a wrong translation, since it clearly is not only brought for sin.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Did you get that from Milgram?
Sounds good.
Did you get that from Milgram?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like it. But, okay, so the question is, and this is my main thing here, and leprosy or tzara'at, is it sin?
Well, if they have to go to the priest to show they're clean, not a doctor, when if they were cleansed like Jesus heals, they sent him to a priest, not to a doctor to check. So that's another sin. We have three examples of people getting leprosy in the Bible associated with sin. So there's all those examples.
What examples?
Miriam
with
Sorry?
Miriam, Uzziah,
Naaman.
Moses?
No, not that.
Paul?
That was just a miracle. It wasn't associated with this sin.
Well, actually, let's look at those examples real quick, because let's first go to Miriam, Numbers 12. Numbers 12:10.
But you also have plenty of uncleanliness.
I'm thinking about in the Moses Bible. When he did the, wasn't one of the signs of God was that he made his hand leprous and then non leprous.
Right. So, right. So let's do that. Let's talk. But first, let's look at Miriam. She the cloud covered over the tent, and then behold, you know, Miriam has metula'at. And what's it like?
As snow.
She's leprosy.
Kashalig. Great.
The third one, I think, is Elijah's servant with Naaman, associated with Naaman.
Right.
Hold on.
Yeah, before we get there, and what was this connected to? Why did Miriam get Tzara'at?
Because she and him spoke against Moses.
Right. So there's
basically challenging the divinely appointed authority.
Right. So there's some sin there. 2 Kings 5. Oh, sorry. And real quick, while we're at Miriam, go to Deuteronomy 24, verse 8. You know, Deuteronomy comes later, and he's giving commentary on things that have happened before. Deuteronomy 24, 8. And he says, in cases of leprous diseases, tzara'at, be careful to do exactly as the priests who are Levites instruct you. You must follow carefully what I have commanded them. Remember what the Lord your God did to Miriam along the way after you came out of Egypt. Uh-huh. So even though technically leprosy is not sin, you can see here in Deuteronomy it's being considered, well, if you have it, there's something possibly suspicious about you.
Well, can you read the rest of that verse? Remember what God did to Miriam?
Yeah, along the way after you came out of Egypt.
And then the next verse?
When you make a loan of any kind to your neighbor, do not go in his house.
So there's a part that says, be careful to do, I guess it's a preceding verse, mm-hmm. everything that I've commanded you. The I there is supposed to be Moses. So again, it's...
but there, it's not in the next preceding verse.
No, it's the verse before.
Yeah,
he shall the name
of the
verse 8, what you read.
In cases of the disease, be careful. Do exactly as the priest who are Levites instruct you. You must follow carefully what I. Okay.
What I. Yeah, that's
what I commanded you.
Right.
And then he says, remember what happened to Miriam. So again, this is an appeal to Moses is the authority of God. And if you don't take it seriously, what he's commanded the priest to do is that becomes sin.
The same as Miriam's sin was saying,
like, who's Moses, basically.
Right. And my point is just the simple thing about leprosy and sin being connected.
Yeah.
That, okay.
It's seen as a punishment.
It's seen as a punishment here. 2 Kings chapter 5. Quickly. Everybody knows the story of Naaman, the Syrian general, commander, soldier, whatever you want to call him. He has a tzara'at. And he comes and gets healed. It's a great story. There's all kinds of literary things to look at. But I want to come to the very end after he's healed. Naaman offers money. And Elisha says no. So Naaman leaves. And Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, runs after Naaman. Verse 21. and is everything okay? Everything's all right. And then he basically says, you know, I'll take.
Actually, he does want the money.
Yeah, he wants the money. And so Naaman gives him 2 talents. Guys, he comes back
and
with
some clothes.
Yeah.
Nice clothes.
The point is he gets paid, and Elisha just has him comes back and he says, "What's going on?" Verse 26. Elisha says, "Was not my spirit with you when the man got down from his chariot to meet you?" Verse 27. Naaman's leprosy will cling to you and to your descendants forever. Then Gehazi went from Elisha's presence, and he was leprous. Kashalik. The exact same phrase as what happened to Miriam. Again, there's sin associated here. And notice it's being passed down, like, to your descendants. There's another curse where leprosy is may be passed down to your descendants. It's a bit obscure, unless you know your Samuel stuff. Anybody come to mind? Second Samuel 3:29. You can just write it down. It's Joab, David's
his arm.
General. Yeah. Well, no, he just says, then put a curse on him and say, you know, may your descendants have this, this, and this, and Tzoraat is one of them.
Wait, who's saying who?
Go to 2 Samuel 3:29. Sorry. Go ahead, Turin.
Okay, 28. Afterward, when David heard of it, he said, "I am a human, I am forever guiltless before the Lord for the blood of Abner, son of Ner, because Joab killed him." Mm-hmm. May the guilt fall on the head of Joab and on all his father's house, and may the house of Joab never be without one who has a discharge and who is leprous and who holds a spindle,
because Joab killed Abner. So
that's pretty bad on David's part, I'm sorry.
So Joab was a gangster though.
Yeah, I was a gangster, so not
that. Right. But you see the connection here of this being passed down like Gehazi. Uh-huh. Then go to Exodus 4:6, and this is what you brought up. 4:6. The sign to Moses. Remember, God gave Moses a sign of the burning bush. He appeared to him in the burning bush. That should be shocking enough. Then he gave him a sign of, what's the next sign?
First one is the rod.
The rod turns into a snake.
Okay, the rod turns into a snake. What's the second one?
It's a rod.
The hand becomes a leprous.
Yeah. Because Moses keeps saying, but. And so, verse chapter 4 of Exodus, verse 6, then the Lord said, "Put your hand inside your cloak." Moses put his hand into his cloak, and when he took it out, what's it say?
Mitzvah kashelig.
Kashelig. The exact same phrase again, that's only used with Miriam and Gehazi. Of
leperized like snow.
Wait, Isaiah? Isn't it also
kashelig? No, kashelig, no. It's just these examples. And Gehazi. So this makes me want to think that this sign is specifically like, you know what, Moses, you're not listening to me, and you're not you're disobeying me. You're not taking in what I'm saying. Go do this.
Uh-huh.
So here's some kashelig on you of Tzoraat.
What do you think of the fact that he doesn't ever, it's not recorded that he ever shows this sign to Pharaoh? The only ones he shows is the rod and the...
That's my point.
The sign from Moses.
That's... No.
Okay. No, but he's supposed to say, go show these signs.
No, that's later. Because he tells Moses, because Moses keeps saying, you know, I can't speak, whatever, and God's saying, I am with you, and to prove that I'm with you, I'm giving you these 3 signs.
But he says that they, because they did not believe, or he viewed the first sign, they may believe the second sign.
I think the leprous hand is a specific sign. Just it's a personal sign to Moses. It's between God and Moses.
But what about that?
What, that go show the second sign?
Says,
that
verse.
And he doesn't even ask between the two. God just says the first, and then he says, and then God says.
Sure.
The
no,
it's kind of a weird sign too. I mean, like, look, God is with me. Look how he messed up my hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Like, I see, just because it says, oh, show them the first and second, doesn't mean that it's literally going to happen. There's lots of things in the Bible where there's talks about what's going to happen.
It doesn't tell you
yeah, things,
they don't repeat it.
Things get mixed around in the wash. But I would read, if you read the whole narrative, I see this as just something between God and Moses. Like, you kind of upset Moses. This is a sign of leprosy. And then down the road, his sister would get the same sign. Right. So Gehazi.
Oh, wait.
Yeah.
4:30. It says that Moses does the signs in front of the eyes of the people. So he at least has to do two.
Yeah, you're right.
So it doesn't itemize which two or three,
right,
but he does at least two.
That's what I was thinking. It's not signs for Pharaoh, it's signs for the people, that the people would believe Moses.
Right.
To send him as representative to
Pharaoh. And that's
verse
28.
Yeah, no.
It makes that connection with the same word that they believe.
Here's the thing, is he says, the other sign is going to be water turning to blood, the Nile, verse 9. So.
But that was from Pharaoh.
Sure. Right. So anyways, that could be a whole other thing we could talk about.
Back to sin,
leprosy. The other example you brought up was Uzziah. Go to 2 Kings. 2 Kings and chapter 15. Okay, Uzziah is the king. He comes to the incense, tries to do an incense offering where the priests are supposed to do it. And it says, verse 5, the Lord afflicted the king with leprosy, mitzvah, till the day of his death. And he dwelt in his separate house, which would be Ramat Rachel. Today he'd be like living like a king. That's a little joke there. But because he could use Ramat Rachel's pool and all that out there.
And since he was a king,
but... But that was, you know, that was outside of the Holy Hill here in Moriah area. And what's interesting is that if you read First Chronicles account of Uzziah, chapter 26, Second Chronicles, chapter 26, verse 19. Chronicles gives a little more input into what Uzziah was feeling at that time. It says, Uzziah had a censer in his hand, ready to burn incense, became angry. And you know what? Actually, Kings doesn't even say it's because of the incense. Kings just says that God struck him with it. Chronicles says it's because of going in to offer the incense. So 2 Chronicles 26:19. He wanted to burn incense. He became angry while he was raging at the priests in their presence before the incense altar in the Lord's temple. Hine hu mitzvah on his. It says it's on his forehead, and then it's like spreading out from there. Oh no! So they hurried him out, and the Lord had afflicted him. And then it says down to verse 21, King Uzziah had mitzvah. Till the day he died, he lived in a separate house, mitzvah, because he had been excluded from the temple of the Lord. Ki nigzar mibet Adonai. Now, this is my next point. Naga, or nega. Mm-hmm. It says the Lord struck him with this thing. And if you go back to Leviticus 13 and 14,
it's all over this place.
Yeah. The whole phrase... is nega tzara'at. It's all over Leviticus 13 and 14. Whenever you have this this nega, this strike, everybody knows nogea in Hebrew, to touch. But it also has a meaning, it can
affliction.
Also have a kind of a violent, a hit, a strike.
Affliction.
Affliction.
Or to be like a plague, to be touched. One of the plagues is called nega.
Right. But it all originates from the hand. It all starts with the original, the touching. And who usually is associated with the touch, especially when it comes to affliction? It's basically God. In 2 Kings it says, "Vaynaga Adonai et Hamelech." You know, God struck the king or afflicted the king, metzorah. You know, with this metzorah. And in Chronicles, it says, "Vegam hu nidhaf latzet ki nagu nigo Adonai." The Lord had struck him. Back to.
It also reminds you of the. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Of the Exodus from war, the finger of God with the plague of the king, the
lice.
The lice. And then it's the hand of God when all of Egypt is, well, the armies of Pharaoh destroyed in chapter 14.
Right.
It's again, it's God's hand that's doing all. It's his outstretched hand that's doing it all.
Right. Going back to Deuteronomy 24's interpretation of Miriam, like when God gave her the leprosy, it uses the word the nega, that Miriam was struck, was given this touch from the Lord, the touch that you don't want. 24:8. Hishamed benega hatzora'at. Nega hatzora'at is the phrase that's used in Leviticus 13 and 14. This word, and this goes to Deuteronomy 32:39. You know the verse where it says, the Lord says, you know, I wound and I heal, I give life and I kill. It's that same idea that God's kind of in control of passing these things.
Interpreted affliction.
Right, affliction. Right.
Some kind of disease or something that.
Has right, but that
afflicted on
but
you.
That's yeah. Comes because of this idea that it's not a good thing.
Right. No.
Right. It's a bad thing.
And it's often divine.
Exactly. It's divine. It's not a good thing. So where's it coming from? Genesis 12:17, using the word. Someone want to read that there, 12:17.
But the Lord inflicted serious diseases on Pharaoh and his household because of Abraham's wife Sarah, Sarai.
And so,
always the wife.
Yeah, Vaynaga Adonai. Again, God afflicts Pharaoh. What did God afflict Pharaoh with?
Wait, that's Genesis 12.
Sorry, my bad. Genesis, yeah. What did God afflict? Nega, right? Negaim. But it is. But we don't know what those are, right? Maybe Genesis Rabbah, they interpret it as leprosy.
Wow.
Exactly, because of nega, because of this word has such, it develops into the Second Temple. It has such a strong connotation that this nega is leprosy.
No, this kind of links continually with leprosy.
Right. Exactly. Now, as we bring it all together, there's other examples too that you can look up later, like Proverbs 6:33, in connection to adultery, about getting this nega. This punishment for adultery,
which would make sense for the Pharaoh, because he took Sarah, the wife of another person.
Right. Yeah. That would.
So his punishment for adultery is some kind of nega.
Right. Psalm 38:11. Nega is connected to sin. It's something that you receive. It's like a punishment or a wound for your sin. Psalm 39:10. And specifically here in Psalm 39:10 and in Psalm 89:32, the Septuagint translates nega as mastix in the Greek. And Jordash, what's mastix?
It's when you whip somebody.
Okay. So kind of that same idea, that same motion of striking someone.
And also the connotation of punishment.
Of punishment.
Right.
Right.
Gary, it's Psalm 38:12.
In the English or the Hebrew? Yeah, I'm looking at 11 in the English. But right, there's always like a verse off usually in the Psalms. Let's see. So here's where we bring it all together. In rabbinic tradition, there is the idea of the leper Messiah. Have you heard that before? Leper Messiah. In rabbinic tradition, Jewish tradition, there's the idea of the leper Messiah. And his name is Hivra, which is Aramaic for white, Hebrew, Lavan. And as we talked before, leprosy is associated with the color white. So I want to read a couple of things here from the Talmud. Rabbi Joshua ben Levi met Elijah, the prophet Elijah, standing by the entrance of someone's tomb, and he asked him, "Have I a portion in the world to come?" And Elijah said, "If the master desires it." And Rabbi Joshua said, "I saw two, but heard the voice of a third." And then he then asked Elijah, he said, "When will the Messiah come?" And he said, "Go and ask him himself," was his reply. And he said, "Well, where is the Messiah sitting?" "He's at the entrance." And depending on which text you have, it's either the entrance of a town or the entrance of Rome. "And by what sign may I recognize him?" "He is sitting among the poor lepers. All of them untie their bandages all at once and rebandage them together." So they untie all of their bandages, they put salve on it, and then they tie this one, then they'll tie that. They put the salve on all of it, and then they do it. Whereas the Messiah, who's the leper, only does one bandage at a time, adds ointment, and then ties it back up. Then he goes to the next one. He says, that's how you'll know he's the Messiah. And so he goes to him and he says, "Master and teacher," he says, "when will you come, Master?" Like, "When will you come, Messiah?" And he said, "Today," was his answer. And on returning to Elijah, he's like, "Well, what did he tell you?" He said that I'd have a portion in the world to come, but he said he'd come today, but he lied to me because he didn't come today, because today he's still there wrapping his sores. And then he replies, "Well, that's, you know, because what he's saying is this is what he says to you today: if you hear his voice," and that's allusion to
"do not harden your heart."
"Do not harden your heart," to Psalm 95, verse 7, talking about when they were at Meribah and the other one, when they quarreled with God and Moses. And Paul quotes from it today. You know, today is the day of salvation. It's in 1 Corinthians. So it's that whole idea about you hear something and then you do it and you obey. And so that's kind of a little obscure thing. But the reason why I brought that up is here's the Messiah. He's among the lepers. And so where's this idea? Why is the Messiah a leper? And so one other place here in the Talmud, in Sanhedrin 98b, the first place I read was Sanhedrin 98a. Both are from the Babylonian Talmud. So the rabbis were going around and they were saying, okay, what's the Messiah's name going to be? And they all came up with different names of the Messiah based on traits or characteristics of like merciful, peaceful. And so they come to this one. His name is the leper scholar, as it is written, "Surely he's borne our griefs and he's carried our sorrows. Yet we did esteem him a leper, smitten of God and afflicted." What did we just quote from? Isaiah 53. So we're going to end there real quick with that. If you go to Isaiah 53, Isaiah 53. And here's something to think about. Often we connect this to Jesus, and we always connect it to Jesus as he's come to take on our sins and to suffer for us. And he was afflicted, nagua, right? Nega, nagua, isn't here. Here it is. Verse 3. Nivze v'chadal. You know, he's despised and he's rejected by men. Down to verse 4. V'anachnu chashavnuhu nagua muke Elohim. We thought of him as being afflicted. Nega, nagua. This is the same word here, like being touched. And again, this has the association of leprosy. Muke Elohim. People thought of this, they understood it as it had to come from God somehow, because, you know, they think of Miriam, they think of Uzziah, they think of these other examples.
Okay, one other point is that he was acquainted with Holim, with disease.
Right. Yeah, he's acquainted with a whole lot of things. And since we've run out of time, we can't go into the whole thing, but down to verse 6, Vadonai hivgia bo et avon kulanu. Right, so God, you know, hurt him for our sin.
Also verse 8.
Yes, verse 8. Ki nigzal mi eretz chaim. Does this remind us anything? He's cut off from the land. I just read it before. Uzziah nigzal mi beit Adonai.
Nice.
They're both this.
Well, that's the whole Milgram's thing for clean and unclean. Everything associated with living is clean. Everything associated with death is unclean.
Right.
He argues that whatever skin disease was, it had this white sheen that reminded you of a death corpse.
A corpse.
And therefore, it was unclean.
Yeah.
It had to be separate from God, who was living.
Yeah.
And you're cut off from the camp, so
yeah,
you'd be on kind of a barren area away from your people.
Yeah. And continuing with verse 8, mi pesha ami nega lamo. So there again, there's the nega of he's suffering this thing, and down
the crimes of the people.
For the,
so it's again the punishment that should have gone to the people that we afflicted on him.
Exactly. And I guess that's where we basically need to end. Time's up. But just to kind of spark the idea that Jesus as a leper, and of taking that on in contrast to Miriam and Uzziah and Gehazi, where it's kind of this, some type of sin has been involved of disobedience, and Jesus takes it on, where it represents sin. In some regards, it definitely represents uncleanness. What were you going to say?
Or represents the punishment of sin.
Punishment of sin. Right. It's,
instead of us getting men.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It represents death, like you brought up about the white, the corpse. And it's disgraceful in the society. And so in Isaiah 53, where it talks about, you know, they hide their face from him. They
and that other people don't understand it. They then think that it's his sin, like God's punishing him, when he's just bearing the sin.
Exactly.
Or he's bearing the punishment by the people. So there's the shame there that people don't understand.
And where it all leads for today, and how we relate with each other when we suffer from diseases and sickness, is another Bible study. But but maybe God uses words.
So I was thinking of a New Testament spin on this. In Matthew, it's